Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Aparuta de sangamatasa tawara ye sorvantabha munjantu satang. So this afternoon, it's our chance to reflect on the way it is. And so just to emphasize reflection is our ability to watch and observe, not judge. We don't make judgments, we just notice, pay attention to what we're experiencing in the present moment is like this. So what I say during this time is to be reflected upon, to be observed, to witness. How does it affect you? If I say to you, your true nature is absolutely perfect and complete, how does that affect you when you hear me, a kind of authoritative figure, say things like that? Because on a personal level, as a person, a physical form, we can't say that I'm perfect, complete and perfect, because that's how we've been conditioned to see ourselves as a physical form, a body, male or female. We have our identifications as a monk or nun, layperson. These are made up words to define a position or condition. So we identify with the words we cling to the words we identify with. So this is called ignorance, or avicca in Pali, not believing that we are something that we're not, because we've been conditioned to do that. So like when we were born, we're given a name and we're told our gender identity and our class, race. These are all givens after birth, so these we identify with. And identity means we cling to it, we operate from the imperfect conditioning that we've received. We didn't ask for the conditioning, it comes according to the parents, the family, the situation. So then we suffer from this conditioning because we're always seeing ourselves in terms of what we're not. And then somebody else tells us we're good or bad or lovable or not, we're beautiful or ugly or fat or too skinny, or and so we identify with, we're affected by what people tell us, what they think we are, what they, how they perceive us. So we can be very offended and upset by what somebody says if we don't like, is if it's insulting or what we're not, we don't want to be identified as that. So we have political correctness. way of talking that hopefully doesn't offend anybody. And what? How do we get offended? Why do we get offended by words or what other people say? And this is in society, and this is international, it's everywhere. Because the human population is identified with the forms, the physical forms. And this is a basic delusion. On further investigation, and this is what the Buddhist teaching is about, investigating, you know, the beginning to see our true nature directly and not just because someone tells us. So I tell you, your true nature is perfect. So I'm telling you that, but that's more me telling you rather than you realizing for yourself your true nature. So vipassana meditation is something that guides us towards realizing our true nature rather than trying to brainwash us, convince us to become something else. But it's important to realize, you know, to even contemplate my true nature. What is my true nature? What am I really? What is the meaning of my life, the purpose? Why do I suffer when somebody says something that offends me? Why do I suffer from getting old, of becoming limited? Old age is usually for most of us a limitation on what we can actually do in life. Because we identify with the body, then I'm an old man, and that's, you know, that's an identity, which means that I am an old body. But being an old body, is that what I really am? And this is to investigate and find out for yourself, because this has to be self-realized. To realize this for yourself. Ben budgetang, it's to be realized individually. Nobody can realize it for you. The most one can do is keep pointing to it, keep reminding you to not be so committed to your views and opinions, your conditioning, that you operate always from the limitations of conditioning, that in itself is limited and not true. For example, you know, to realize the body is not yours. It's a sankhara, something that was born and will die. Now that's pointing to the reality of life for all of us. When we're born, birth is the reason for getting old and dying. And yet we're quite committed to being a separate person, my feelings, my rights, my things, what is mine, and just operating always from this me and mine position, because it can be threatened. This physical form can be threatened. You don't, you know, by nature itself, lightning might strike me, strike the form and kill it. Or you get a disease, a fatal illness. So we try, you know, modern technology and science, medical science is visually trying to cure disease. And so we have all kinds of improvements from when I was born, when I was a child, the ability to prevent diseases and control them somewhat. Antibiotics, things like that, have, you know, been able to deal with infections, with sicknesses that were incurable, say, 80 years ago. Am I my thoughts? Am I the way I think and what I believe I am? And so you question, I'm not just saying I'm not these things. It's just witnessing to the fact that I think I am. Like Descartes' philosophy, if I think, therefore I am, there's a kind of truth to that. When you observe what you think you become, so this is the witness of thinking. The watcher, the observer of thought, because thought is conditioned into us. We're not born with a language. So when a newborn baby, you know, can't speak, it has no language to use, it has to learn it. So we're educated to believe in things. We're taught religion, national views, racial views, prejudiced views, ideals, high-minded ideals we're taught about how things should be, how life should be. But ideals are also impermanent. They come and go in our conscious experience of life. And then there's identified with the human body that we have, there's a lot to fear because it is a rather vulnerable form in nature. So the human form is very vulnerable, subject to all kinds of accidents, problems, incidents, catastrophes, wars. But what most people really looking for in life, with the delusion of being a separate person, is I want peace of mind. I want to have a peaceful mind because the thinking mind is not peaceful. And it's desultory, it moves about. You can think one thing one moment and the opposite the next moment. So thinking is, we identify with our education, if we've been highly educated or if we haven't been educated, we identify with being illiterate or intellectual. People can say we're stupid, uneducated, ignorant, beings, and we can believe that we are, or we can disbelieve. But all of that is due to grasping ideas, ideals, words, concepts, views, opinions, sankharas, phenomena, and we call this our life experience. So this grasping is done out of conditioning, because like a newborn baby, an infant, has to grasp, to hold on to things, because it's totally helpless, dependent on the mother to survive. You know, it can't feed itself or take care of itself in any way, totally helpless. So from a helpless infancy into learning a language, growing up, identifying with the age group that you're in, identifying with the gender of the body, all these are forms of grasping. So in the teaching of the Four Noble Truths, the second noble truth is about desire, because this is a desire realm. The forms we have are desire forms. They want to live, they want to be peaceful, they want to survive, they want to be enlightened. And they don't want to suffer. They don't want to get sick or get old. Because your self-view, your ego, is formed when you're young, not when you're old. So you have an ego and a self-identity and a way of grasping it that you carry through to throughout your life, no matter how old you get. Unless you start being the watcher, the observer, not the critic, not the believer in what you're told, or what you read in Buddhist texts, or what monks tell you, or anything else. It's about you realizing your true nature. So what we really are is not about belief. It's unbelievable, because it's always here and now. It's not something you lack. It's not something far away. It's the closest ultimate reality here and now that we have been conditioned to overlook, to not identify, not see that, to not realize that, because we're so bound into the conditioning process that we've received. So the attitude of the Buddha encouraged us to observe. In the First Noble Truth, the suffering, there is suffering to be understood and be witness to suffering rather than the owner of suffering. So here at Amaravati, our life here, is an opportunity to witness experience. And the encouragement, like these reflections I give, are all encouragements to remind you to start questioning life, rather than just operating from views, opinions, ideals, concepts, prejudices, biases that you've been conditioned by. So the attitude is to understand suffering and desire, the causes of suffering is clinging to desire. So this is quite brilliantly stated in the Second Noble Truth, the causes of suffering is desire. How can we get rid of desire? Can any of us just get rid of desire? Can I, a monk, senior monk, can I just stop desiring things as a person? When I'm stuck in a form that's all about desire. So this form is a desire form. What I see, hear, smell, taste, touch, how I think, you know, desire operates because the form is about desire. And it's not about committing suicide, slitting your throat or your wrist, but understanding that the form, the desire form, is not self. It's a form that was born, grows up, gets old, and dies. That's its nature. And that's what it's supposed to do. Because this realm made out of earth, fire, water, and air is imperfect. That's its very nature. You're not going to achieve perfection through earth, fire, water, or air. No matter how advanced technology becomes, because technology is all about forms, and it's always going out to objects, going to the moon, wanting to go to Mars, investigating all the minute forms of atoms and neutrons and so forth, is still going out to objects. These are objects, atoms, DNA, neutrons, Mars and the moon are all forms in space. And as long as we seek happiness through going outward into objects, through the senses, because that's what our senses are all about we identify with the senses as myself. I'm what my eyes, my nose, my ears, my tongue, my body, my feelings, and then the objects that affect the eyes, ears, nose, tongue, body, mind, are objects. But in ultimate reality, the subject is an object. In terms of Dhamma, the eyes, eye consciousness is an object, nose consciousness is an object, and on through the senses, the sensory experience, the senses themselves and the objects that they perceive are all sankharas or phenomena. So what is it that is aware of phenomena? What does mindfulness mean, or awareness? When we're advised or encouraged to be mindful, we take it very personally. I wasn't very mindful today. I've heard people talk like that. I've lost my mindfulness, or I should be more mindful. It's all about me as a separate person, as a physical form with eyes, ears that hear sounds, noses that smell odors, and the body that feels pleasure and pain, the mind that moves all over the place, the thinking mind. When I try to figure out who I really am as a, from the position of ignorant personal identity, we want an identity of whether it's good or bad or right or wrong, something where I fit in, where I know who I am, the group that I identify with, my successes or failures, my appearance, on and on like that, how that we make these objects a subject of our life. And so we suffer because we're operating from delusion, from ignorance, and not from wisdom. We're being the witness, where the subject, the personal subject and its objects, this is what mindfulness really is. Conscious awareness, our ability to witness experience. Both we can be aware of how I feel, how the feeling that arises in the moment when I'm being praised or blamed is like this. Notice the witness isn't saying it shouldn't be or should or shouldn't be. It's not fair. It's just witnessing. Sometimes life's experiences are totally unfair. And yet ideally it should be fair, as we've been conditioned to believe. Ideally everything should be fair. Equality, fairness, freedom, justice. How things should, that's thinking in ideal forms. But samsara is about not ideal, it's never going to be ideal. Nobody's life is ideal in the forms that they identify with. We might think it's ideal for a moment when we're successful or praised or make a fortune or get everything we want, then we think, my life is perfect, it's ideal. But it's not going to stay that way. It can't sustain itself because that's not the way conditioned phenomena operates. It's always subject to change. So when we seek perfection, fairness, justice, as some through an ideal, then we're inevitably disappointed. So reflecting, like the Buddha encouraged us to reflect on all conditions are impermanent. So what we identify is a condition. The body is a condition, the eyes, ears, nose, tongue, mental states, emotions, feelings, they're all conditions subject to other conditions. Now this is not about believing this, but observing anicca or impermanence. What is, can an impermanent condition observe another impermanent condition? Or what is it that's aware of impermanence? When you're contemplating just that all conditions are impermanent, can just the idea of I've got to be mindful of impermanence, but to be aware that I've got to be mindful of impermanence is being aware of that just the feeling I've got to be mindful is a condition. I want peace of mind. I want to be peaceful. I want love. I want security and stability. So there's a lot of things as a person we want, and we seek them in the realm where where these conditions are impermanent. So wisdom is reflecting on the way it is. All conditions are impermanent. Sape sankhara anicca. All sankharas, all conditions, all phenomena, its very nature is impermanent. Therefore, it's imperfect. So wanting life to be perfect, fair and just, equal, free, for everybody is an ideal, very beautiful ideal. But it's still operating from the ignorant view that that's what I want, what I think, what I believe in. Rather than with wisdom, wisdom is aware that all conditions are impermanent. So wisdom, mindfulness, is just a simple ability we have to reflect on the way it is. We're not trying to convince ourselves with words like everything is impermanent. We can say, well, the Buddha said everything is impermanent, so it must be. That's a belief, because you read it in the suttas, the Pali Canon, the Mahayana scriptures. But believing everything is impermanent is not the point. It's to investigate. And this is what meditation or vipassana is all about, investigating. Are all conditions impermanent, or is that, did the Buddha get it wrong? Is there something permanent? And no matter what we think might be permanent, it is impermanent. So thinking can't reach your true nature, can't reach the Dhamma. Your original nature. So the Dhamma doesn't have words. When the Buddha became enlightened, he said, how can you teach what I've realized? Because you're teaching it with the words. When you talk to other people and you want to spread the word, you use words. And the Dhamma doesn't have a language, has no words. But it's our true nature. When we take refuge in Dhamma, it's more than me as a physical form, a monk, taking refuge in some ideal belief in Dhamma, or something that we're supposed to believe in. What is Dhamma anyway? Can you define it? Can you objectify Dhamma, make it into a phenomenon that you can actually witness to? Or are you the Dhamma already? The Dhamma is conscious awareness, knowing the way it is. And in this realm that we're experiencing, then the way it is we're going to experience this relentless, inexorable changingness of life that we see, hear, smell, taste, touch. think and feel. And that witness is not personal. It's anatta. Consciousness is not personal. Consciousness through the form, through the eyes, ears, nose, tongue, body, mind, is impermanent. It changes quite easily. So the senses themselves are very impermanent. Our vision, our hearing, our sense of smell, taste, touch, these are all subject to change to other conditions. So sensory consciousness is anatta. The eyes are sankharas, are phenomenon, a phenomena that is subject to change because I can witness sight. I know there's awareness that seeing is like this. Just looking out at you, it's like this. Seeing through the eyes is like this. And that seeing is very impermanent. It changes, the objects that I see change quite readily. The ability to see is changing. So eye consciousness is very impermanent. And hearing, and smelling, tasting, touching, emotions are very, and go all over the place. Being praised or blamed, admired or insulted, the emotions change according to what we hear. But the witness, the Bhutto or the Buddha, this word Buddha, means the witness to the way it is. All conditions are impermanent. And Dhamma, Sape, Tama, Anatta, all Dhamma is not self, not personal. So Dhamma consciousness, not eye consciousness or ear consciousness, but the ability to be aware of the way it is refuge in Dhamma. And we're using Buddha or witnessing, observing Dhamma rather than the way it is. Buddha observes, knows the Dhamma, and he points to the way it is that all conditions are impermanent and subject to suffering, change. So the freedom of knowing your true nature is bliss or peace, or whatever words you want to use. Because you're not operating from ignorance anymore, but from wisdom. Wisdom is natural to us as human beings. You know, whether you're educated or not educated doesn't make any difference. Sometimes intellectual intelligence is an obstacle because we're so impressed with our brilliant intellect that we can't witness it. We believe in our rational thinking mind. We're very clinging, devoted to thinking and perceiving without realizing it. So wisdom, you know, it's not something you want to, when you're brilliant, you know, you still suffer, no matter how high your IQ might be or emotional intelligence, you still suffer. Because that's the very nature of ignorance clinging to phenomena as one's reality. I remember when I was a samanera, before I met Lungpa Cha, I had my first lessons in meditation at Wat Maha Thot in Bangkok. And so I learned that all conditions are impermanent. As a samanera, I began to just challenge that. Is there something that is permanent? And then the reaction I had to that was the Buddha said, everything is impermanent, so it must be. But I was aware of that reaction because I had great confidence in Buddhist teaching. So I believed quite literally what he said or how I interpreted the Buddhist teaching. All conditions are impermanent. But is Dhamma my true nature? Is that a condition? Is that a sankhara? Is Dhamma a sankhara? The word itself is. The word Dhamma is a sankhara, but it's using a word to point to the reality, to awaken us. Buddha Dhamma Sangha, when we take refuge in Buddha Dhamma Sangha, then it's an invitation to reflect on the way it is, not just to believe scriptural teachings. Because we're quite conditioned to believe in scriptural teachings or to disbelieve in them. So that that's how we're programmed and educated to believe or disbelieve. There isn't any God. There is no meaning to life. We can believe there is a God, or life has its meaning and purpose. We can believe that, or we can believe no meaning, no purpose, no God. So believing is a form of grasping. Whether you grasp the positive or the negative depends on your karma, your fate, your character. But in the Four Noble Truths, it's pointing to awareness. When we take refuge in Buddha, that's not taking refuge in some idea of Buddha or some kind of Buddha force, Buddha nature in the universe or the historical sage or what people tell us Buddha really is. But the actual word means awakened. Here and now, apparent here and now, timeless. So apparent here and now, santitiko dhamma is how we define dhamma. It's apparent here and now. And what is apparent here and now for all of us? Is that we're conscious. This is apparent here and now, whatever time, whatever place you're in. Timeless. Can you imagine timelessness? Because imagination, words are all about time. They have a beginning and end. You can't imagine timelessness. A Kali Kadama, it's impossible. I've tried. I can believe in the idea of timelessness as just like eternity or immortality or something like that, words that convey a sense of eternal time. But time is a sankhara. All conditions are about time. The body is about time. The days, the nights, the seasons, the sun and moon, stars, the universe is all time in space. And so what's apparent here and now is that even that what we're looking at, like looking at the moon or the stars, they're far away, but they're in space. Is space timeless? So space is here and now, so it's apparent. We can perceive space just through looking and observing a space in the temple here. It's like this. But consciousness, can you perceive consciousness? What is it? I know I'm conscious, but I can't perceive it. I know this form is in consciousness. This body sitting here talking is in consciousness. Everybody knows they're conscious in this temple room right now. It's apparent here and now. But you can't define it. If it's just eye, ear, nose, tongue, body, mind consciousness, then that changes very much. But what doesn't change is consciousness itself. Consciousness without feature, without form, without beginning and end, is what mindfulness really is. We're learning to be mindful. You have to let go of everything. Let go of absolutely everything. All sankharas, not get rid of them. It's not about destruction, annihilation. It's learning to realize the suffering you create by grasping objects that you see, hear, smell, taste, touch, or what you believe. So when we take refuge in Buddha, Dhamma, Sangha, are those who practice this, who realize this. So in Sangha, it's like individual human beings who practice in the right way, proper way. Not according to some technique or idea they've acquired, but from the realization apparent here and now, consciousness, awareness here and now, is a witness to change. And can the Buddha, can awakened awareness change? Does consciousness change, or is it always here and now, timeless? Are you conscious when you're asleep, in deep sleep? And we think, no, we're no longer conscious. But the body is still it's in a conscious state. It's not thinking. It's not grasping ideas. It goes into deep sleep. In the dream state, are we conscious? Where dreams can be totally irrational. Because in the awakened state, we've been conditioned to be rational, reasonable, according to how we regard time and place and what's right and wrong. But in dream state, these kind of restrictions are absent. So one can dream all, you know, nightmares, or terrible nightmares, or beautiful dreams. But they're will-o'-the-wisp, they come and go, they're very uncertain, indefinite. They definitely, dreams are impermanent and not self. So anatta is saying, it's implicit that it's saying there's no separate self. We're not separated, we're unified in conscious awareness, in wisdom. That's where we're all equal, where we have this equality that we long for, where we have the peace of mind that we seek in life. It's through awareness and wisdom, understanding the way it is. So I offer this as a reflection for this afternoon.